My name is Jeff Lerner, and I interview elite performers from a wide range of disciplines, entrepreneurs, athletes, celebrities, scientists, artists, and more. This is Unlock Your Potential. Welcome to another episode of Unlock Your Potential. So grateful to be back with you, having amazing conversations with amazing human beings. And today we found another one. Her name is Tina Wells. She's a business strategist, advisor, author, and the founder of Relevant Media, a multimedia content venture that brings culture-shifting storytelling, interested to double-click on that, and beloved products to market through innovative partnerships. I'm going to speed through kind of the rest of her bio. She has she published something called the Elevation Approach, which I love. We're going to be super aligned around this concept of work-life harmony. She has Elevation Approach. I have a life operating system. We're going to see how those two things align together. She developed it while confronting her own personal and or professional and personal burnout. I relate. I'm sure no one listening relates to that, though, right? That's not. That's we're the only two people that have ever struggled with that. And then she expanded that into a book and a product line that's available at Target stores nationwide. She's also the author of some tween fiction book series and done a ton of stuff. She's launched a market research company at age 16. I was dropping out of high school at age 16. She was like launching entrepreneurial ventures. So we'll have to talk about that. She's been recognized by Fast Company as one of the 100 most creative people in business, Essence's 40 Under 40 list, the American Advertising Federation's Hall of Achievement Award, which this is probably inappropriate to say, but she looks far too young to be winning all these flipping awards. My goodness. Tina, welcome to the show.
Hi, Jeff. I love the intro.
Yeah, just like you scripted it, right?
One of the most unique intros I think I've had to date.
Well, I'm suitable for one of the most probably unique people I've had on the show. This is quite a pedigree, and I'm so glad you're here, and I'm so glad we're going to get to share with the audience. I feel like where to begin sort of presents itself. I mean, you founded a market research company at 16. So obviously you had an early slant on life towards entrepreneurship, value creation, kind of going your own way, let's say. Why don't you, if you would, maybe take a few minutes and set it up from the beginning. Like, I feel like there's always got to be a story when you see, like, I see those billboards when I drive down the highway, they say like, inspire, pass it on, those billboards. And there's always like, or not always, but a lot of times they'll have like a 14-year-old that's like, removed 700 gallons of pollution from the ocean. I'm like, who are these kids? So set us up, please, Tina.
I have to tell you, I don't think I was that inspiring. I was a 90s teenager, you know, and I just watched this show on Apple TV that was a documentary, like a series about the supermodels in the 90s. And so if anybody wants to really understand, like, where I started, how I started, like that is a great backdrop for what was happening in 1996 when I, you know, first started my company. And going back to something you said earlier, you know, I want to make it clear I was not intentional about starting a business, but I have always been really intentional about following passion and curiosity. And that is really kind of the through line in everything from how I go from starting a company at 16 to launching products at Target. It's always about this through line of like following curiosity. So when I was 15, I, as most 15-year-olds did in 1995, I was reading 17 magazine, found a cool, you know, a job alert for writing for a newspaper for girls. I applied. I got hired as a product review editor. I was super excited. And then I was like, okay, what does a product review editor do? Obviously, it's very obvious you review products. So started lining up very cool 90s brands to review. And something interesting happened. Every time I would send my reviews back to companies, they would say, I love what you had to say. If I send you more product, will you keep telling me what you think? And so that was how I started and continued for years. Didn't know I could make money doing it. That aha moment came a few years later when someone actually told me, I was in my freshman year at college, and they said, listen, got to tell you what you and your friends did. Super awesome. I just paid someone $25,000. It was not nearly as good as what you and your friends did. You have a business, you know, talked to a professor. She helped me sort it out after a long, long independent study over a 13-week semester. And so they're, you know, I'm sure your audience can relate to that grind of, you know, birthing the big idea and full proofing it and testing it and Around that time, it was the first dot-com bubble. And I'm really, really grateful to this professor who basically said, I don't think you should follow these dot-comers. They're going to dot-com. Build a really smart business framework. And that framework I built with her lasted for the 24 years I had the agency. And so, you know, I was very lucky through the agency to meet a lot of really amazing people, work with big brands. And that really helped me get to my next level, which was writing middle grade fiction books. And from there, that got me into Target, which then got me to a bigger relationship with Target and launching products at Target. So again, the through line is really always being curious. You know, it's a principle, the second principle, the elevation approach, and really not being afraid to dig into a passion area. I think so often, at least when I grew up, we were taught to have the safe job, right? I can't tell you how many people said to my parents, Tina's so smart. She could have been a doctor. She could have been a lawyer, right? That was before we saw what I was doing, but people were not congratulating my parents in the mid 90s for having an entrepreneurial daughter. They were like, she's wasting her potential, not doing something a lot safer.
Ah, meanwhile, all of the good little boys and girls are still paying off their $250,000 in student loans, and 92% of doctors, it's reported, would not advise their children to go into the medical profession now. Like, it's, I mean, I know it's not about being right so other people can be wrong, but still, you got to feel kind of vindicated, right?
Definitely. I mean, listen, we could have a much larger conversation around career paths and what we're teaching people are the right things to do. And you know, the people I know who are killing it right now are, you know, taking HVAC classes and going into trades and, you know, developing and honing skills. And that still goes back to understanding a need in the market, right? And it's really young guys who are saying, we're going to rebrand how some fields look. So I'm all about disruption and taking the typical path and doing something a little more, you know, undefined.
I love that. And as a high school dropout turned jazz musician turned entrepreneur, I will certainly align with you on that. I love this concept of curiosity. Ooh, what a rich, underused word. And so I'm curious, especially, do you have kids?
I don't, no. Okay. I'm one of those people who gets to be a glorious auntie, so.
Oh, that's cool. Well, so you're exposed to kids, right? I feel like there's a cultural thing. I have four kids, three teenagers and a younger girl. And more, it's not even just like, they're not my body of my sample group. My sample group is them and all their friends, right? So I'm having constantly spent the last 10 years surrounded by middle schoolers and then high schoolers and now college age students. And so I feel like this concept of curiosity, and I'm especially interested in your take on this because you actually write, you have a product that serves that audience, right? Writing the tween fiction, we call it, right?
Honest June, Stitch Click, yeah.
Yeah, and so how do you feel, where do you feel that generation is right now in terms of this conversation, right? Like back in the mid-90s, there was a strong bias toward going out on your own is, call it wrong, and playing it safe is right. Now, I'm curious, how do you feel the world is now? I'll just stop there. How do you feel the world is now for that audience?
Yeah. So, you know, like I spent my career, I was known as the millennial whisperer. So I feel like I missed that part of my career that was the explaining, you know, different generations to big corporations. What I'll say about Gen Z that's super unique and where we should all pay attention. I think millennials, I would almost dub them the great disruptors, right? They had to disrupt systems because around 2008, every system we had been taught to believe in failed that generation specifically, right? We all know collectively what happened to all of us, but this generation in particular, they were graduating from college and all the things that should have been the next setup, right? You work your corporate job, you buy your home, all of that went away for them, right? Mm-hmm. And so what they did is they said, we can't trust the system. We have to build around, right? They became very anti-establishment. And what do I mean by that? They created Uber, right? Think about every single historical block that stood in the way of making Uber, right? Taxi lobbies, all the things that they just had to come at it and say, we're going to be relentless at getting the job done, right? And then you have like Airbnb and the Warby Parkers, and we see the birth of direct to consumer, right? So millennials brought us anti-establishment. What makes Gen Z, one, I adore Gen Z, but what I think makes them an incredibly dangerous generation in a very good way is they are saying, we're not going to go around systems. We actually believe systems need to work for us. And what we're going to do is we're going to go into these systems and we're going to change them, not just for ourselves, but for everyone else, right? So if you want to be a creator, that's great. You need to make money, right? So if you look at the generation as a whole, they're the wealthiest generation in history. They are the largest generation in history born in the United States, right? And also the most diverse. So you've got the most diverse group of people who also were born here, who are saying, this is our country, right? This is my country. We are do certain things. The government needs to function, right? We don't want to create these alternatives. We are going to make the system work for us and support our values and ideals. We're going to make money as creatives. We're going to have non-traditional ways of making money. And they're really smart at doing these things. And they've seen, you know, their parents, their grandparents go through, you know, a time of losing money. So I think they're very focused on how do I spend, but also how they earn, and not being willing to give up their life and many fun things to earn money. And so they're just and going about it their own way. Maybe they'll go to college. Maybe they won't go to college, right? There isn't this defined path. It's like, we have to do one thing. But above all, I believe this is a generation that's going to make money. Like, they're very committed to having money and making sure they can fund the things they want to do.
Yeah, I've totally noticed that too. I get a lot of outreach on social media because I'm known for kind of mentoring entrepreneurship, right? And I get so many young people like, hey, I just finished high school. I'm at this existential crossroads, right? Like, what path? Mm-hmm. There, I see this traditional path. I see the price tags associated, the literal and metaphorical price tags of that path. It's not computing for a lot of them.
Yeah.
So I'm curious, and by the way, I had no idea where we were going to meander into, and I'm loving this conversation. So I actually love this conversation around young people or that Gen Z infiltrating for the purpose of conversion these systems rather than trying to go around them. I'm curious, you know, because it seems like there's perhaps a conflation in their approach. Maybe the question is like, what is the point? What is the purpose? What is the strategy? Because what I'm thinking in my mind is like, there is a lot we need to do to optimize systems to make them better for everyone, right? But it seems like sometimes, and maybe this is the media, that conversation ends up getting dominated by an ideological conversation. We're like, oh, you've got these Gen Zers in the marketing department. Let's use two recent examples of Target and Bud Light, mm-hmm. that are like, they're trying to impose an ideological agenda. And so they end up kind of getting almost like smeared with the paintbrush of like, this is like an ideological thing. But really, it feels like what we're talking about is actually an optimization for the good of all thing. And I'm curious if you could counsel that generation or maybe counsel our generation who's figuring out how to interface with that generation of like, here's how we actually infiltrate and convert effectively rather than creating conflict or creating unproductive conflict.
Yeah. So, I mean, I actually don't put the fault of the conflict with Gen Z, right? I think about, you know, I obviously know firsthand a lot about what was going on at Target, you know, especially right. How brand there and feeling the impact of that. And I think what you actually saw were two systems in conflict, right? And this is not a Target thing. This is when we talk about any time when I had my marketing company and I would go into a big Fortune 500 company and they would say, we need to change. We need something new. I would say, no, what you're comfortable with is 50% of what you're currently doing and 50% of a new way. No one is comfortable with 100% of a change happening so quickly, right? It's just not, we're not set up as human beings to be fully ready for our world to change like that. That's just not mm-hmm. programmed, right? And so a lot of times what I think you find is Gen Z approaching things and saying, this is the right solution. And then we get halfway through the right solution and we want to reverse back to our comfort zone and say, no, no, that wasn't right. And so in a way, we're like criticizing Gen Z, but we're taking their ideas, half baking them. And then as soon as there's a bit of a resistance, we're pulling back. Right. And so if you think about brands, and I get it, you build these multi-billion dollar brands and they're safe and your job is to protect shareholders' interest, right? And that means you've got to protect the revenue. And so the minute there feels like there's some conflict there, you're pulling back. And what we're seeing because of Gen Z, right? I fully believe Gen Z is who's holding us accountable, is, as you pointed with Bud Light or Target, the price they're paying is heavy, right? And we're in a place now where we're saying, it's like, who is our audience? Who are we really kind of rocking with, right? Are we going with a younger audience? Are we going with what you say as an ideology? I think at the end of the day, people need to go and really understand their data and really understand who their customers are. And they really need to understand who they want to serve. And if that's changing, that needs to change, right? Because Gen Z is arguably, they're diverse and they have money and they have many things, but there are very large demographics that need to be served. And there are larger demographics that are kind of aging out in a way too, right? So we've got Silent Generation, we've got Boomers, we've got Gen X, then you have Millennials and Gen Z. We've got five different generations and to the credit of these retailers, right, or these brands, they're trying to serve all of these people, right? And so if you think about it, you tip the scale one way, then you're moving towards something and away from something else. And that, navigating that is a very difficult thing, especially in the day and age of clickbait, right? Yeah, and I think you got to weigh all of these things to see. And ultimately, it comes down to whose dollar do you want?
Well, yeah, that's what's interesting to me. If you look at kind of like what is the priming that sends Gen Zers out into the world with this disruptive mindset, because I'm like a reconciler, right? Like I believe in a lot of the social progress that I think we're seeking through some of these disruptions, but I'm also like a pretty diehard capitalist. Where like, how dare you compromise, enterprise value for the shareholders? That's actually, that is like antithetical to the foundation of the prosperity that generally has resulted in improving conditions for everyone. So it's, you can't throw the baby out with the bathwater. So I'm curious, what's coming to mind for me is that there's perhaps an overcorrection and what I've found through having conversations with this generation is like, they totally get social progress. They totally get evolving these, sort of staid, old fashioned, big corporations that, planted their flag 100 years ago and are kind of slow to shift. But there also doesn't seem to be a sensitivity or maybe even a respect for like, no, there's like, millions of people's retirements are based on dividends that are paid by these stocks. Mm-hmm. And it's like, yeah, like you have to respect that too, because the alternative, it's like Winston Churchill said about democracy, I would say the same about capitalism, which is like, it's the worst system out there except for all the others.
Yeah, but I would. It's not Gen Z's fault if the media chooses to address certain narratives for their benefit, right? And I think you can't put this at Gen Z, right? Okay. You have to understand the machine that's being fed by all of this, right? And that machine is actually doing quite well when it comes to their shareholders, right? That is their job, is to take something, exacerbate it, and make it bigger than it actually is, And so I wouldn't put that to Gen Z, because the idea that everyone should be treated equally in retail, okay, we might contribute that as a Gen Z philosophy, right? But in general, if you are of the thinking that everyone should not be treated the same way, I don't know if that's an ideal that we need to maintain, right? I mean, I am a female small business owner who understands that until the 80s, right, I was born into a time where I could not have my own credit card. That is not an ideal that needs to be maintained, right? Women needing their husbands to sign for them to have banking privileges is not something that needs to be maintained. So the reality is there's some things that need to go away, right? Now, when it comes to the comfortability, where I agree with you is we need to have more grace for the idea that not everybody is going to want to deal with change or deal with new, right? And I think that what happens is if you don't agree with certain things, you are then meant to feel bad. And I think in general, there just needs to be a little more, I don't want to say kindness because I'm bringing it down. I think understanding, right? Because I don't want to, I'm not going to be kind to someone who thinks that as a woman or a Black woman that I don't need to have access to certain resources, right? I don't owe you my kindness. But I do understand if America is looking very different or if the promises and certain things America promised you does not seem to be materializing, right? I think there needs to be understanding around that because that is, in fact, a very true thing, right? I can look at our history and say, whether it was spoken or unspoken, there were several things that were true growing up in the 90s for me, right? That don't seem to be true anymore. And we have to acknowledge that, right? So I think that what's missing is the acknowledgement, right? So maybe I could say to Gen Z, we've got to acknowledge this may not be comfortable for some people, and the response of, but they just need to get with it, is where I feel like we can have more of a conversation, right? I think that there's that part of like, how are we, but in some areas, just because people don't agree and there's a great group of people that doesn't agree with something, we have had many things in our history that have not served everyone that we, like the banking example I give you, that's just not right, right? That just need to not, right. It's not something we need to coddle in a way.
So I feel like the words, empathy is coming to mind as you're talking. And yeah, I think that's kind of where I'm coming from. And I'll say this and we can kind of shift gears, but like, is to me, like all antagonistic relationships are grounded in fear at some level. Right. Mm-hmm. And the antidote to fear is love. And I would counsel Gen Z to like, actually tactically embrace the skills of communicating in a way that feels loving and empathetic. And you'll get a lot more traction a lot more quickly with ideas because they're more right or wrong, or the other side is more right or more wrong, but just because you actually reduce the amount of fear in the approach.
Yeah, but that may not be their job, right? And what I mean by that is Gen X is actually an incredible generation that goes very unnoticed. But I often saw in my corporate work that Gen X is who keeps the lights on, right? Because they mm-hmm. are very good at sandwiching and bridging between, you know, older boomers and silent generation. And at the time when I was doing my work, Gen Z was not yet in the workplace. So I was really focused on millennials, and their ability to manage up and down was pretty incredible. I think Gen Z, like any young generation, has it right. You know, I think their job is to be disruptive. And I think every generation has a role to play. And if they're being disruptive, then you don't look to Gen X to be disruptive, right? You look to Gen X to, and they're very good at this. It is a natural born. Think about how little we talk about Gen X, right? They're just kind of there keeping all systems running, but they have an incredibly empathetic, natural ability, right? So I think within these bigger corporations, what needs to happen is almost a multi-generational task force that takes on big ideas, right? And thinks through, how are we going to implement this so everybody gets aligned? And the way to do it is not to bring it, it cannot be a Gen Z idea or Gen Z approach, right? It needs, maybe the impetus or the idea comes from Gen Z, but then there needs to be a multi-generational task force that is saying, how do we bring this into our corporation in a way that is fully owned by the entire corporation. And I have to tell you, I don't think in the examples you've given that those corporations weren't fully behind it. You have to imagine Target has over 350,000 people that work there. You know, that is a small country in a way. You know what I mean?
Right,
like that,
right.
They're in their own culture. And from, I have been at the store level all the way to the C-suite, and everybody embodies those same values around kindness and And it's always customer first and it's always inclusive, right? They lead with those values. And so sometimes I think what happens is, quite honestly, we assume that everybody else in the world has our values. Everybody mm-hmm. else in the world maybe doesn't, right? And if you think about Maslow's hierarchy of needs, if some people are just at the place of trying to secure their basic everyday needs, you know, maybe they're not at the top thinking about their self in a different way, right? And that is, to your point of empathy, is saying maybe you're just not there yet and at the place to have this conversation. But I don't think that because certain generations harbor certain beliefs that are not of service and completely outdated, that we have to continue to coddle that. I think we do have to empathize and say things are changing and we need to have an approach. And I think the more inclusive we can be within corporations of including every single demographic in that conversation, I think the better outcome. But do I think it's going to be the best right now? No, we're in a very disruptive time. I think it's going to be a long time before we look back and say we made really important decisions now. You know, I think if you look back to the late 1960s, that was an incredibly disruptive time in our country, right? And there are people going through that who thought, why are we doing this? We should take a slower approach. And I'm very, very grateful that they did what they did then, that I have the ability and freedom to do what I'm doing today, right? And so I think it's really hard to put a measurement on this right now and say, today is the ticker to if this is successful or not.
Hey there, real quick, I just wanted to let you know, I have been concentrating a lot lately on providing tons of value to my text message community. This could be random thoughts, this could be letting you be the first to know about an event I'm planning or a special I'm running or a free training I'm hosting. Anyway, just shoot me a text to get subscribed. The number is 702-996-3926. Thanks so much. Let's get back to the podcast.
Well, that's, yeah, I appreciate, first of all, I should appreciate this really articulate, thoughtful conversation about a subject that a lot of people have a lot of strong feelings about. And I think I'm enrolled. Like I think I'm willing to say, yes, I agree that fundamentally, like I always think about the word conflict, right? Like that word, the Latin means with a spark.
Mm-hmm.
And like a spark, I think of like striking two flint pieces of flint together, right? Like it's conflict. You're putting two rocks in conflict for an extremely productive purpose.
Right? Yes.
Okay. So thank you. I had no idea we were going to have that conversation, but I really enjoyed it, honestly. I'd love to pivot into work-life harmony. Mm-hmm. Like you, I don't love the term balance, but maybe you could talk about that shift or that evolution or that elevation, if you will. Please.
Yeah, I think, you know, what I personally realized when I was trying to get balance, and I think any of your listeners who are entrepreneurial or entrepreneurs know, we get into the zone, right? You have a new idea, you love the idea, and you're just laser focused on it. And then you feel the inevitable burnout, right? And so balance taught me that it's fine. If you're working hard, you just need to play hard. And so what started happening is, I was just piling more and more and more on the scale to feel in balance. And I just felt crazy all the time, right? And I was physically not well and things were just happening. And what I started to realize with the idea of harmony, and that went back to the first principle, the elevation approach, right? Just declutter your space. When I kind of got rid of everything and just took a look at things, I thought, okay, what I don't want is a scale. I want a plate, right? And on that one plate, I want my favorite things. It's my meal. And I know when I add a flavor that works and doesn't work. And I'm not trying to stack it. I'm just trying to have the best thing. And so maybe, you know, the biggest thing on my plate really is my work. And then I start to add in the other things, but I need those other things to make the work the highlight, right? And so that for me is the philosophy that's worked better, is to say, I always want to be in harmony. And, you know, if you're doing a dissertation, if you're, you know, doing a test of whatever it is, like, there are times in life that are going to require more from us when it comes to work. That is just natural, right? Like I know a lot of parents in the month of September, your kids are getting back to school, you're getting back into the habit. The focus on home in September is super heavy until you're in your new routine, right? That is inevitable. That's going to happen. So maybe you're not taking the trips and vacation time is over, but you can plan a family game night or something that still lets you have fun, right? But if you were trying to do it the balanced way, you'd have as much fun as you have work, and that's not sustainable.
I'm a as a former professional musician, I'm super resonating, no pun intended, with the harmony descriptor. And I'm literally thinking about, you're right. Like, if it's like too growly in the bass, you don't say, oh, well, just add more notes in the treble. You're like, oh, well, that chord voicing is too thick for that register. Like, subtract something, right?
Yeah.
Sorry, not to get nerdy there, for music nerdy.
My youngest brother went to Berklee School of Music, and he is a brilliant, brilliant musician. So I am surrounded by people who like to talk the way you do it. I am humored by it all the time. You get really into it. Like, when you're in, like, going to a dinner with very talented musicians is very funny, because you guys have your jokes. And
it'd be a different podcast, but I'd love to have your brother on and just get it. I don't know. We can pick apart a Coltrane album or something. Okay. So yeah, you mentioned, I mean, I know that this elevation approach, and I really relate to this and appreciate it. It's a very detailed framework. Like, you've taken this, like, a lot of people have an idea of like, oh, I should harmonize my life. And then they're like, maybe I'll reschedule my dentist appointment or something. But no, you took it a lot further. And I'd love if you could, I mean, the time we have, maybe share that framework, almost give like a quick, you know, introductory course on how we apply this approach in our lives.
Oh, of course. So I want to take a step back and say, how did I get to this framework? I was at lunch with a friend, and I was telling her about these books I had coming up. I was like, I've got 7 new books. And you know, she said, you know, I wish I could do that. She's like, I have an idea for something, and I just can't get it out of my head. And as any entrepreneur will tell you, we hear, like, a light bulb goes off, right, when we hear this. And I thought, okay, this is a very talented friend of mine. If she's having this issue, are other people having this issue? I know I had this issue, and I needed the framework for myself, because I was always stuck in a loop of coming up with a big idea and socializing it and then going back to work on it. And I felt like I was never launching anything and burning out, right? That's the two worst things that could happen, that you're never accomplishing what you're trying to accomplish and you're going through the burnout. And so what I realized is I had developed, now it's a 4-phase approach, but for a while I was existing in the first 2 phases. And so the 4 phases of the elevation approach are preparation, inspiration, recreation, and transformation. And I was caught in a loop of preparation and inspiration, meaning I do all the background work to get an idea where it needed to go. And then an inspiration is when I socialize it, I get really excited by talking to all the people in my community. I'd network like the best of them. And then I go back to trying to perfect it, and I never really did anything. So when I introduced recreation, which to any entrepreneur, the idea that we're going to take a little bit of rest, I think is the most counterintuitive thing ever. But when I started to incorporate that, and I tested it, it took years and years and years to get to the point of being good for me, of adding recreation. But once I got the recreation in, I was able to finally transform and launch things. And I was able to start launching a lot of things and getting a lot of books done and product lines, because I really then systematized everything. And so the book takes you through not just these 4 phases, but I realized I couldn't get from like phase 1 to 2 without a few principles of what we call instant elevation. So, and just to give you an example, in preparation, the 3 core principles there are: first, to declutter your space; second, to get curious; and third, to know your numbers, right? And then every phase has these little instant elevations that will help you get to the next phase. And so there's a book, the workbook just launched in September. I love the workbook. It has tons of exercises that will help you achieve work-life harmony. And really, the book ultimately asks you a lot of questions, and really requires that you get a really introspective and say, what do I want in this stage in my life? What does true harmony feel like for me? And then how do I go about achieving my version of work-life harmony, right? It's not Tina's version. It's your custom-made version of what work-life harmony looks like for you.
So I'm super interested. The idea that really stuck out to me, because it's what I need to hear, is this idea that when you insert recreation, the preparation, inspiration, transformation, call it loop, becomes possible. And it's funny. So let me share the visual that came to mind when you alluded to that. Every morning I have I have my little morning routines and my concoctions. And one of them is actually very gross, but I'm proud of it. It's apple cider, raw apple cider vinegar mixed with pre-workout before I go to the gym. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And then I dilute it with alkaline water, right? And I recently, so I get in the gym, I get in the car, go to the gym with my wife, and I'm always drinking this thing in a cup, and I'm trying not to spill it on myself every time she drives, because I have to drink this drink. And finally, she's like, Jeff, I cannot handle the smell of that drink in the car. I'm just waking up. We're going to the gym. It's like 5 or 6 in the morning. And she's like, so I started putting it in a bottle with a top so that the smell wouldn't be wafting out in the car. And as soon as I did that, I had my, sorry, this is kind of a long dorky story, but I had my proportions, my quantities that I measured of the different ingredients. And I put it in this bottle that has a top on it now, and it fills it up right to the brim. And I go to shake it, and you can't shake a bottle if it's too full. It needs some extra space to slosh around and develop, let's say. So you see where I'm going with this metaphor. It's like recreation. And so then I said, okay, I'm going to cut back on my quantity of water. So there's, which makes it taste even grosser, but now there's room to shake the bottle. And I feel like what you're saying is, if you want to develop as an entrepreneur or as a liver of this harmonious, high production, high performance life, you got to leave a little room in the bottle so that it can slosh around and develop.
Absolutely. And also, it just makes space for newness to come to you, right? Mm. New ideas. Like, as entrepreneurs, we thrive with ideas. I can't tell you how often I go into like a slow flow yoga class, and this is maybe midpoint of my day, like 3 or 4 o'clock. There's a lot of day that's happened, right? And I'm just thinking about things, right? And I don't go in with any intention of like certain, and I come out and I'm like, oh, this is how I solved this problem. This is how I solved that problem. And I really believe that like the solutions came because I just got off the train for a minute, right? When you're on the train where you're looping, you're going, there's no time for anything to just come to you, right? And we all know as entrepreneurs, however you find that like divine space, that divine, you need to get that inspiration from somewhere, right? And that is what feeds us as entrepreneurs. It allows us to go be who we need to be to our communities, to our stakeholders. And so you have to have some fun. You know, you have to just play. And I think you said this earlier when we started talking, you were talking about watching your kids. The thing I love most about watching children is they know how to play. They've nailed it, right? They know how to play and how to have fun, and that they know how to be curious. And I talk a lot in the book about like what we can learn from the kids in our lives, and just that idea that you have to make some space. And I say, just try it, right? So if you can't, I am not expecting that you're going to read this book and say, okay, clearing my schedule for 2 weeks. It's like, start with 15 minutes and see how you respond to that 15 minutes and you know, check it. Make sure that you're like, oh, this happened because I took that 15. Like, constantly give yourself that checkup to say, am I improving? Does this feel better? And you will inevitably give yourself more time, right? If you start measuring that, if you start measuring the effects recreation is having, you're going to add more of it, and you're going to notice you're getting done as much, if not more. It's easier. It feels lighter. And that's when the harmony piece starts to kick in.
I love it. I mean, it is right there in the word, right? Recreation.
Yeah, it's true.
Okay, so since I'm sure I'm not the only one that wants more of this amazingness, how does the world come and find you and perhaps partake of what you offer it?
Thank you. TinaWells.com. You'll find everything. And of course, I'm very fortunate to say Target.com, Target stores. Elevation had its run in Target, and now I have a new line that's a Target, focused on luggage and travel accessories, called Wander Lane. And so you can see that at Target stores now through next spring. So I'm super excited to bring the idea and the concept of work-life harmony to travel. I think we can travel in a way that's better. You know, travel for me brought a lot of inspiration, but there are also times when travel was not fun. And so I thought we could bring some inspiration to travel. And so that's my next project there at Target. But TinaWells.com, you'll find everything.
Super cool. I was literally going over my schedule this morning with the team, and I'm like, and they were like, well, how does travel fit in? And I'm like, it doesn't, it never does. It's always going to break our plans. So we just got to deal with it. So I'm literally going to go check this out. I'm like, oh, how can I make travel integrate a little better into what I want for my life? So, cause I have to travel a lot. Tina, congratulations on being an epic human and doing amazing things. Like, this has been so cool.
Thank you so much. I appreciated this conversation. This is definitely one of my favorites. So thank you for having me.
Well, I appreciate that. And of course, as awesome as Sina is, the viewers and listeners know what's coming, that you are the best part of this show. You're why I do what I do every single day. And I'm so glad we got to spend this time together, everyone. Take care, and we'll see you next time.
Hey, it's Jeff here. If you liked this episode of Unlock Your Potential, it would mean so much if you would like and share the episode on whatever platform you're listening or viewing on. And if you really like what we're doing here and you enjoy this podcast, please consider leaving a review. There is so much work that goes into these episodes, and you leaving a positive review lets us know that that work is reaching people, and especially it helps us reach other people. Your review could be the reason that someone else decides to tune in, check out this podcast, and unlock their potential and ultimately level up the quality of their life. So thank you so much for your support and for listening, especially if you like or share or leave a review. Thank you for helping us spread the word, and thank you for unlocking your potential to go make the world and your world a better place.